The topic tonight is insights into a girl. And Chuck mentioned this as a possibility. I think he called it "What Makes a Girl Tick" or some such thing, you know. And I thought, oh, help, where do you ever start with something like this? And I think trying to put into an hour or so, you know, insights into a girl's life is kind of like a contractor taking an hour to explain the building of the Empire State Building. You know? And there are so many things that could be covered. But I really pray that the Lord would give me some ideas that would be profitable to all of us. And it's been good for me to really delve into this too. Because sometimes we may think that we have insight into a girl's life. And yet I wonder how much time we spend thinking through on this. And you know, when he mentioned that topic, and I realized how little I really had on this. Now, lots of times I spout off, you know, about different things about girls, but I've never really shared anything quite like this. And I think it's impossible, really, in one session to really share all the insights that we, you know, have gained over a period of time. And I'm sure, too, that there are some who have studied women for years and still at times throw up their hands in despair, you know. But I think there are some basic things that we can look at that will help us in understanding girls and meeting their individual needs. And the place I started was, well, why were we created in the first place? In Genesis 2:18 in Berkeley, it says, "The Lord God said, 'It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make him a suitable helper, completing him.'" And I believe that scripture is clear in bringing out that women were made to be a helper to man. Now, the man wasn't made for us, but we were made for the man. And because God has created us for that, I believe that he has given within each woman an intense desire to love and to be loved. I think this is a very normal desire. In fact, if girls didn't have this desire for a home and a family, we probably wouldn't be getting married. And if poor fellows, what would they do for wives? But I think all of us can probably confirm that deep in the hearts of each one of us, is if we had our first choice, it would be, I mean, we have a desire to get married. This is what we would like to do, and to serve, to be a helper to some man. In fact, I have never met a girl who did not want to get married. I don't know, maybe some of you have run across one. And I've only heard of one woman who made this statement. And I read about it, I think it's Eugenia Price. And she apparently has said that she really doesn't have any interest in getting married or having a family. But she's the only one that I've ever heard of. Now, I think some girls may say that they are. But I think you can pretty much count on the fact that they're bluffing. That deep down inside, this is what they would really like. And to hide this, you know, to say, well, it doesn't make any difference to me whether or not I'm married. I mean, I think we're being deceitful. Because I think it really does matter. And I think because of this desire to marry, that I believe that this can be a girl's biggest trial. To really wait until God brings that right one into your life. And sometimes we try to take things into our own hands. And if we get, say, beyond nowadays, you know, 21, 22, we start to sit on the panic button, you know. Where is he? All of our friends are married. And then, you know, by age 25, you haven't made it. Then, you know, you've really got to be concerned. But I really feel that this is the roughest area for a girl to surrender to Jesus Christ. And I feel that once a girl has this area surrendered to Christ, she's got the biggest area really committed. And I'm not sure that it's a once-for-all decision. I feel in my own life that, I mean, this is something that I continually have to commit to the Lord. And I just tell the Lord, well, now, Lord, you know the desires of my heart and what I would really like, but I surrender my life to you, to your control. A few years ago, I was talking with a NAV fellow, and he was kind of bringing me up to date, you know, on some of the thinking in the NAVs. And he made the statement that the NAVs were now encouraging girls to get married. encouraging girls to get married. Where are there any girls that need encouragement to get married? And I thought, I want to go and work with them, you know, because they've got that area already committed. Well, I mean, I don't think that any girl needs to be encouraged to get married. Now, I do think that the encouragement needs to be on the fellow's part to choose a wife that has had some training. I think sometimes that mad fellows are fearful maybe of a girl who has had training or who may be ministering in the lives of girls, because I think that, well, they don't want a high-powered individual. And I think sometimes that's what they think we are. But see, I feel that it's a matter really of surrender to Jesus Christ. And if we are walking really with the Lord, then He will help us in any area that He leads us into. And I think probably most of us, you know, who we would much rather be married than to be on our own or to be ministering in the lives of girls. I mean, if we had our druthers, that's probably what we would druther do. I feel, too, that trained girls will be more submissive. Now, I think sometimes they feel that the more training a girl has, you know, that, well, maybe she'll really be really independent. But, you know, in my experience of working with girls, I have not found this to be true. I feel that very often it's the younger, immature girls that have greater problems with submission than the older girls whose lives are really committed to Christ. And I personally feel that submissiveness is an attitude of heart. And if we are submissive to Jesus Christ and to His Word, then we will be submissive to people. And I think that girls need to accept the fact that the desire for a home and family is a natural desire. And although this would be the ideal for every girl, yet we don't live in an ideal world. I think so many times we think of ideal situations. And yet I think we have to realize that because we live in a sinful, sin-sick world, I mean, we are not in ideal situations. And when I was 19, I committed my life to Jesus Christ. And at that time, I told Him that if I could bring more glory to His name by being single, that's what I wanted. And you know, I think God took me up on that. And I believe that God wants us to commit our lives to Him. And it could be that He would ask us to be single for maybe a few years. And then He would bring someone into our lives. And see, the girls that I work with, I'm not raising up girls leaders, because I think that these are really few, the ones that God really puts His hand upon and gives them this responsibility. Now, I think many people can be used in the lives of girls. But it seems like these days we don't really hear a lot of challenges to girls. You know, are we really willing to deny ourselves for Christ's sake? And I know sometimes, you know, I really fight it too. I think we think, when we pray a prayer like this, we think, well, this, I'm willing to do this, but God will never ask it of me. And He knows that I need a husband more than, you know, somebody else. And it'll be somebody else that He'll ask to do this. And yet I think that we have to realize that, I mean, He does have a plan for us. And I believe too in Psalm 84:11, no good thing will He withhold from them that walk uprightly. But I do believe that He wants people who will really be willing to give themselves completely to Him for whatever He might choose. And then we need to realize that God is not going to chip us. Now, see, the devil comes along sometimes and says, well, what's wrong with you? You know, how come you can't get a husband? And, I mean, and especially in the world today where there is so much pressure put on people to be married. And sometimes it can get pretty rough. But we have to realize that, I mean, if God may have a job for us to do for a short period of time. And I think that God has married for most girls. But I don't assure the girls in the Minneapolis area, well, of course God has marriage for you. I cannot do that. But I think that God will never gift you, and he will perform the things that are appointed for you. And, you know, all of us would prefer the security, the love and companionship of marriage, to even the most exciting career. And yet, we need to realize that happiness is not dependent upon marital status. Now, so many single girls think they're not satisfied in their own lives, and they think, well, if the Lord would only bring my Prince Charming into my life, then I'd be satisfied. But I don't believe it, because I think that the inner needs that we have will never be satisfied with another human being. And if a girl is not satisfied before she's married, I doubt that she'll be satisfied after she's married. And that's why I feel it's so important for girls to find their satisfaction in Jesus Christ before they marry. Because then they will not expect their husband to fill this vacuum in their life and be disappointed because he can't do it. And I've had married friends who've shared with me, too. And I know that there are tremendous joys in human relationships, but there's only one person that can satisfy that inner need in our hearts, and that's Jesus Christ. And happiness may or may not accompany marriage. And I think it may or may not be the complement of single blessedness. I think all of us have met single girls who are frustrated and have become bitter and set in their ways. And I know this is a thing that has really frightened me some about being alone. You know, I've seen certain women and I think, oh, deliver me from becoming like them. And I think it's something we have to work on, but I believe that God can really help us. And I feel, too, that I don't think we have to say, well, you know, I just feel that God's never going to bring anyone into my life. I don't know. Sometimes I thought, well, it would be easier if the Lord would just say, okay, Jody, no, it's not for you. You know, just commit to you, and that's it. But sometimes I think it's good for us to have this hope, because I think it keeps the chin up and the sparkle in the eye. But I really feel, too, that the secret of happiness lies within ourselves and not in our circumstances. I really believe that. And if we don't find happiness in when we're single, I just wonder if we'll find it when we're married. Now, in a magazine article that I read about a single girl, that brought out there that sex impulses and the mother instinct, according to psychiatrists, are the greatest energizing forces of mankind. Psychiatrists also agree that these drives can be diverted into other fields to the satisfaction and welfare of the individual. The only real danger is in repression. And see, I think that God can take these desires that we have, and he will use them as we reach out to people. And one of the exciting things to me is every once in a while one of the girls that I live with will come up to me and say, well, Jody, if you had gotten married, where would I be? And you know, that kind of gives you a good feeling. But sometimes it's not enough, but... I really feel, too, that women have a tremendous influence over people. And I want to talk to you for a few minutes tonight on this influence that we can have. And sometimes I'm not sure that we are aware how much we can influence people. And I think that we can have an influence for either good or for evil in people's lives. And I think if we are aware that how much we can influence people, then we're really going to ask the Lord to really keep us, you know, in touch with him so that we do have a good influence on people. And I read some of Eugenia Price's books, or I was just kind of glancing through one of her books. And she came out with this same thought on how she feels, too, that women have this very strong influence on people. And she says here that God created single women in exactly the same way he created married women, with the same desires, the same needs, with the same deadly or blessed weapon of womanly influence. Every woman has this influence. And in her book, Woman to Woman, she refers to this influence again. And she said, God created into women a particular power to influence. And she uses as an example, in Genesis, who did the devil go to? Eve. Now, why in the world did he go to Eve? Well, apparently he knew that Eve had a little influence over Adam. And it says that Adam ate too. She influenced him to sin. And she says, I am convinced that most of us are not aware of the power of this innate ability to mark the lives of those whose lives we touch. We need the very sensitivity of God Himself in order to live lives which mark with beauty the other lives we influence. And then she says, let's face it, a woman's influence is perhaps no more important than a man's influence, but it is different. Women scar hearts and souls, which is kind of interesting. And she said, God did not give us this power to influence without a reason. But it is certain that he did give it to us, not to use as Eve used hers over Adam. And see, I feel too that there are many wives who have influenced their husbands so that they are no longer maybe serving the Lord today. And that's why I feel it is so important for young fellows to make sure that they marry a woman who has really had some training and whose heart is really set on the Lord. Now, they may not even be aware that this happens, but I think that over a period of time, there can be that subtle influence where maybe the wife wants certain things, and see, husbands want to provide certain things for their wives, and maybe they feel that they can't do it when they're following the Lord, and then pretty soon, you know, they're not walking or not in the Lord's work. And Eugenia Price also told how at one time she wrote these stories on the radio, Unshackled. I don't know how many of you have heard any of them, but they tell stories of different people's lives who have been reached, I think primarily through the Pacific Garden Mission. But she brought out that 212 out of 250, the most influential person had been a woman. 212 had been directly twisted or blessed by the influence of a woman. And the woman who blessed or scarred the lives was not always the mother either. Often she was a school teacher, a sweetheart, a wife, a daughter, a grandmother, an aunt. I am sorry to report that in most cases a woman's influence was destructive. That's kind of shocking when you think about that. Gladly, I remember the stories in which the woman's touch was a good creative touch, but they were in the minority. And I think that this is kind of shocking when we think about it. I think as we work with girls, we need to realize what an influence they can have upon fellows' lives. And see, I'm not sure that some fellows realize how much girls can really influence them. Now, it's true that some have greater influence than others. And I think if we are controlled by the Spirit of God, then we're not going to influence someone or try to get them to do things our way. And that's why it's so important that girls really be helped. And to me, it's exciting to see the difference between a girl who has had help and a girl who hasn't had help. Now, I think there are many examples in Scripture, too, of evil influence and good influence. Well, one thing I'd like to mention, too, is that one time I remember when Dawson shared with some girls in a special session with them, he made the statement that he said, you know, you girls will try to wind the man around your little finger, and then when you get him there, you don't like it. And isn't that true? I mean, lots of times, we try to get our own way. And then, I mean, once we get our own way, we're not very happy with it. And I know I can, as I look back in my life, I can think of times when, there were certain fellows who would always do, you know, what I wanted. But they were not the ones I respected the most. The ones that I respected the most were the ones that stood up and said, no. And isn't that true? I think it's true that, I mean, we really don't want to have our own way all the time. And I think that we respect more the fellows that will be willing to stand up and say, you know, no soap, we're not going to do it that way. At least that's the way I felt in my own heart, that I respond a lot more to fellows that really have their own ideas and that are not always willing to go along with mine. And then Ahab and Jezebel, 1 Kings 21:25. And it says, truly there never was a man like Ahab who committed himself to evil in the sight of the Lord, seduced by Jezebel, his wife. And as you read the story there, you can see where Ahab wanted somebody's vineyard or something, I guess, and you know, he was kind of bemoaning the fact that he couldn't buy it. And so Jezebel said, well, go out there and take it, you know. So he went out and took it. He did what she wanted him to do. Then we have the example, too, of Samson and Delilah. And this is in Judges 16:16. And here it says, so it came about after she nagged him daily and kept urging him without stopping until his soul was weary to death, that he opened to her his heart. And then he told wherein lay his strength. And, of course, that was the end of Samson. And then, of course, we have the contrast in Proverbs 31. And here it talks about the godly woman. And in verse 12, it says, she will do her husband good and not evil all the days of her life. And this is what I want to see in the lives of girls that I help, that I can have the assurance, because of the life that they live, that they will do their husbands good and not evil all the days of their life. You know, Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 7:26, I found more bitter than death the woman who has snares and nets at heart and whose hands are chains. Well, now he ought to know a little bit about women, because he had, what, 300 wives and 700 concubines? He had a wee bit of experience with women, I think. And this is a comment that he made. And I think all of us know what Solomon was talking about here, that in the flesh we know what we can do and how we can use our snares and traps and nets. Sometimes, well, we don't see men around Minneapolis too often, but once in a while we go to a conference where there are some men. And so sometimes jokingly, after a Bible study, maybe the last Bible study before the conference, when the girls go out the door, I'll say, now leave your snares and traps and nets at home. But actually, these are not the girls that I have to tell that to, because the more mature girls are not the ones that have the snares and traps and nets. It's the younger girls. And I tell you, sometimes all you have to do is just watch girls and see how they operate around fellows. And this verse really comes alive, I think. But I'd like to go into this just a little bit anyway. I'm sure all of us know what this refers to. But I mean, I think this refers to a girl who is obsessed with getting married, or who is obsessed with getting her own way. And see, in the flesh, I believe that this is the way we are. Now, we can be obsessed with these thoughts without anybody else knowing, because it can be in our thought life. And outwardly, you would never know it, but inside is this strong desire to get her own way. Now, what are some of these snares and nets? Well, I just jotted down a few, and I call the first one sweet talk. Or flattery. And sometimes we can do this too. We're not very sincere in the compliments that we dish out. And we do it because we think it's a thing to do. And secondly, turning on around fellows. Pretending we're something we're not. One of the girls recently in Minneapolis had a fellow who came to make a few calls on her. And the advice I gave her was, be yourself. And it's very interesting. She works for a Christian man. And as she walked out of the office the afternoon before she was going to see this fellow, he gave her the advice, be yourself. It's kind of interesting. And I think we do need to be ourselves and not try to be something that we aren't. And then three, I have planning ourselves somewhere where we know we'll run into a certain someone and then acting surprised. Well, fancy meeting you here, you know. When we knew that they were going to be there all along. And using our eyes or our bodies. The way we look at fellows, the way we walk. In fact, there was when I was on the Glen, I talked to a fellow one time. He said, you know, Jody, when I was in the service, when I was around a lot of girls who weren't Christians, they really used their eyes. And then he said, you know, when I thought of coming to Glen Eyrie, I thought, boy, it's really going to be great around those Christian girls because they won't use their eyes. And he said, you know what I found? They use their eyes just as much as non-Christians. And I think this is something we need to be careful of. And we need to work with the younger girls on. And it's hard not to use your eyes, but if your eyes are dedicated to the Lord, then you had better use them. Then fifthly, our dress. I think the way we dress can be a snare or a trap. And then also in this verse, it says that her hands are chains. And through her touch and embrace, she entices him. And once she's influenced him, he's bound. I mean, I think this is a verse in Proverbs I must be referring to here. And this type of person is out to possess a person. And to really have him do what she wants. And I believe that she controls people by demanding their time. And I met a girl from the University of Minnesota one time. And there was a fellow who was interested, quite interested in her. And he was a young fellow who was really moving ahead for the Lord. And I really cautioned him about this girl because I said, you know, she is really young in the Lord. Well, as time went on, she kind of got tired waiting around for him, you know. So then she became engaged to a Christian fellow who was a youth director in a church. And then eventually she broke off with him. And I was asking her about it. And she said, well, you know, she said, I just can't be married to somebody if I'm not number one in that person's life. And she said, I just can't have somebody who's giving themselves, who is so dedicated to something like that. And I thought, wow, you know. So there are girls like this around. And if, you know, we really need to observe girls' lives, what will they really be like? Will their hands be, you know, will they hang on possessively to someone, or will they hold them with an open hand? And girls do have an influence on people, and we need to be controlled by the Lord and let him influence others for good. See, the exciting thing to me is to know that God can give me victory in this area so that I can have an influence for good. And yet I think we need to be aware of the fact that we do have this influence. Well, so much for that. Then, I have another thought down here, that women are much more subjective than men, and we can be extremely sensitive. Men see things from a different point of view, they really do. You know, I've been in meetings where I've seen men talk so frankly with one another in sharing their disagreements that I wondered if they would ever speak to one another again. And yet, you know, after the meeting, there they are, the best of buddies. Now, if that had been two women, I think it would have been years before they would have been brought together again, or would have taken a real miracle to unite them. And we're just not that way. And I think that we are so subjective that sometimes the hurts really do go deep. And yet I feel that in some ways we really need to pray that God will help us so that we're not too sensitive. And see, so many times when we hear something, we think, oh, did they mean that for us? Don't we do this? And you know what I do sometimes? I think, Jody, forget it. You know, don't even dwell on it. Don't waste any time on it. And I think we have to remind ourselves. Otherwise, we can be so subjective and so sensitive to little things that are tossed out. Because we are so subjective by nature, I think that we need to learn to keep the big things big and the little things little. And we can very easily get things turned around so that the little things become big things. And actually the big issues in life are pushed aside. And I think too that sometimes we can become so emotionally involved with people and their individual problems that we lose sight of the overall objective. It's so easy for us to get involved with someone and their particular problem, and we can really get bogged down. And I think what we need to do sometimes is to stand back and take another good look at this. And I know sometimes in my own life I've had to go to a man in the area and just tell him, like, I said, here it is, you know, I'm telling you all about it. And I say, I can't believe how objective they are. I just told him, well, not too long ago, there was something that was just overwhelming me, and I thought, I don't know what the answer is. And I coped with it as long as I could, and then I finally thought, I thought I'd go talk to someone. So I went to this man, and I laid it all out. And he said, okay, Jody, this is what you have to do. Just like that. That's what we did. And it solved the problem. Wonderful. Do you know what I mean as far as getting emotionally involved in some of these things that we get so emotionally involved, we really can't see straight. Okay. And let's be on guard that we really watch out for that. And if some, you know, some girls are so extremely sensitive that if you even mention anything at all to them by way of correction, you know, here are the big crocodile tears. Well, I know that people are different, but somehow I think we need to work with these girls too, you know, and say, now listen, it's not such a big deal, you know. I mean, all it was is some little thing. And I think what we need to do is to help them, you know, not to, to become so concerned over a little thing like that. And a verse that has really helped me is Psalm 119:165. Now, I'm not sure what it says in other versions, but in the King James, it's really great. And it says, great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. And many is the time when I felt that, you know, there was a little hurt that came my way. And, you know, when I started to nurse that little hurt, the Lord reminded me of this verse. And nothing, not one or two things, but nothing shall offend me. Now, I'm not sure I've lived that to the fullest, but I sure try. Also, women are more emotional than men. I'm sure we all realize this. And I think that there are certain emotional needs of women that need to be met. And I tried to jot down a few of these that came to my mind. First of all, I think we need to be loved. And the exciting thing about knowing Jesus Christ is that we know that he loves us with an everlasting love. And if we don't have the love of a husband, we do have the love of the Lord. And of course in Isaiah 54, it brings out that the Lord will be our husband. And in Ephesians, you know, husbands are told to love their wives as they love themselves. I think it's interesting in that passage that there's no command for the wife to love her husband. Of course, there is in other places, and it teaches, and it says too how the older women are to teach the younger women to love their husbands. But I think in many ways that loving people is not necessarily our biggest problem. But I think sometimes men do need to be reminded, you know, that, well, we need this love. We need to be assured that we're loved. And it's interesting in this passage that it said in the last verse in Ephesians 5, it brings out how the wife is to see that she respects her husband. Now, I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like I could love most any man if it, you know, if we were in the right situation together. And yet, I don't respect every man. And I think that it's really important that we respect our husbands. And if we're, you know, if we are going to submit in marriage to a husband, I think it better be to somebody that we really respect and we trust their judgment. And I know sometimes the fellows, I've heard different ones say, you know, well, girls aren't too submissive. And I know one time there was a fellow who was marrying one of the girls that had lived with me. And before they got married, I told him, I said, no, if you feel that this girl is not submitting to you, don't harp to her on submission. But what you should do is just examine your own life and see, well, am I really giving her the love she needs? Because, you know, if when we are loved, I think we're secure in this love and we don't fight for our rights. But it's when we feel that maybe we're not really loved, that people don't really care, then I think sometimes I wonder just how submissive we are. And I believe that, too, that God has made us so we want to submit. Now, in the flesh, when it pops up, I mean, we don't submit. But But I believe that basically in every woman there's a desire to submit. We would much rather have somebody run us and tell us what to do than to run ourselves. In fact, in Paul Tournier's book, Escape from Loneliness, I copied three sentences out of there, and he quoted a Dr. Axel Muntz, who had written that, quote, women, though they seem unconscious of it themselves, much prefer to obey than to be obeyed. And later on, when a young colonel said to him, you're mistaken, my friend, nobody likes to obey. Everyone likes to give orders. The same writer replied, I disagree. Most people and almost all women like to obey. And I really think that deep down in our hearts, we would rather obey. We would rather submit than to run our own show. In fact, sometimes I think if I never had to make another decision, I would be the happiest person in the whole wide world. And it's hard to make decisions. And I'm not saying that, you know, if I were married, I'd never want to make any decisions, because I know that that's not true. But anyway. And number two I have down here is that I believe that because of our emotional makeup, we crave security. We want to know that someone will take care of us. And here again, we have the promise that Jesus Christ is our security and that he will take care of us. And then thirdly, we need to know that we're accepted. And of course, in Ephesians, it brings out how we are accepted before God by Jesus Christ. He makes us accepted to God. And then fourthly, I have down here, we desire to feel needed. There's nothing worse than feeling that, well, nobody needs me. And I think we need to be busy. And you know, there are some verses in, where is it, Titus and Timothy, I think, that where Paul warns women about being idle. And I don't think we're to be idle. We were meant. I think we are to keep busy. And then the fifth need I have down here is the desire to communicate on a heart-to-heart basis. Now, I feel like the older I get, I mean, as I look at marriage, the one thing that I would really like is somebody that I could really communicate with on a heart-to-heart basis. I mean, when we're younger, I think we think of, oh, somebody, you know, is handsome and has certain qualities. But, boy, to me, this area of communication is so important. And yet, the exciting thing here, too, is that we have the Lord to communicate with. And see, he understands us far better than anyone else. And we can communicate with him. And then I believe, too, that the Lord gives us close friends with whom we can communicate. And the ones that we can communicate with on a heart-to-heart level, I believe will become our closest friends. And I think that this is what we really want. Now, too, I think that there are certain things that make women tense. There are certain things that can really be problems. Now, I got these ideas from the book A Woman's View of the Christian Home by Shirley Rice. I don't know if any of you have seen this book or not. But I kind of adapted them, changed them a little bit to fit us. And first of all, I think we become tense when we have a sense of inadequacy for the ministry entrusted to us. And I think all of us have experienced this, that there are times when we just don't feel adequate for what God has given us to do. And then the second thing is we all look at immediate circumstances rather than at the purpose for which all things work together. I've noticed this with girls too, that many times the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. And you know, to get girls to be happy and to be satisfied right where they are is really something. And I have counseled so many girls, and I just told them, I don't think the problem is going to be solved by a change of circumstances or a change of location. If you're not satisfied here, I don't know that you'll be satisfied anywhere else. And that's why I really think that we need to work with girls so that they are living their life to the fullest right where they are now. Because it's so easy to think that, well, there are greener pastures somewhere else, it's got to be easier. But no matter where we are in life, that we're going to face problems and there are going to be difficulties. And then the third thing, we haven't learned to sit loose to the world and everything in it, as Matthew Henry says. We haven't learned to sit loose to the world and everything in it. And then he goes on to say, too, whatever you have of the world in your hands, keep it out of your heart. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes we can want possessions, and they can really take a place in our hearts that they shouldn't have. And sometimes women set great store by things. We are never satisfied with what we have. And I think sometimes that women can push their husbands to get ahead, too. In this, and because we covet this and that, and never being satisfied makes us tense. Then the fourth thing, we have not studied to be quiet. You know, in 1 Thessalonians 4:11, it speaks of studying to be quiet, and Psalm 46:10. And I think, too, that some of our problems could really be ironed out if we would just take a few minutes to be quiet instead of running around spotting them off everybody. And then fifthly, we inwardly resist God's will, for we have never come to that place of submission to the circumstances we are in. We inwardly resist God's will, for because we have never come to that place of submission to the circumstances we are in. One time another girl and I were talking to John Crawford. It was before he was married, so it was a long time ago, but he threw out the question. He said, what do you think that I'd like most in a wife? And oh, I tell you, we were guessing all kinds of things, you know. And after about 30 minutes of guessing and all these wrong answers, he finally made a statement. He said, I would like a woman who has the ability to be happy regardless of the circumstances. That's kind of interesting when you think about it. And see, I think this is what we need too, that our happiness doesn't come from the outward circumstances, but that no matter where we are, we can be satisfied. Whether at the Glen or New Zealand or wherever it might be. That's where he is now, he and Helen. Then number six, we harbor unforgiving attitudes toward others. We harbor unforgiving attitudes toward others. And if there's one thing in life that we need to do, it's to be forgiving. Sometimes we take so personally things that happen. And, you know, I think that we can really carry around an unforgiving spirit. And if there's one thing that we need, it's to be willing to forgive someone. And then to accept forgiveness on our own behalf, too, I think. Also, I think we need to consider that a girl's moods are often due to premenstrual tension. I think that this is something that we have to face. And I'm sure we've all experienced how much more emotional we are at that certain time of the month. Things bother us more, and we're much more sensitive and ready for a good cry. And sometimes I think, well, you know, why not just go ahead and cry? We feel a lot better afterwards. This seems like it builds up, you know.